Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'll be your host today. Thank you, folks, for pulling up a stool and joining the conversation. In our next segment, we talk with North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner and member of the North Dakota Industrial Commission, Doug Goring. What is the current state of hemp in North Dakota?
Well, since 1997, we've had a law in the books that would support the cultivation, the production of industrial hemp in North Dakota. Now, we can't confuse that with marijuana. This is industrial hemp, something that's being grown across the world on 400,000 acres. And the United States is actually the biggest purchaser of industrial hemp, not only for the fiber, but the oil, the seed, the meal. It's used in the cosmetic industry. It's used in paper manufacturing. It's used in furniture, food items. It has a great deal of use. And people may argue, you know, what those health benefits are. You kind of see these fads growing all over. But there are some significant differences in industrial hemp when you look at the seed itself. The THC level is like 0.03%, while marijuana is like 20%. And you have to keep under those levels to even qualify as industrial hemp. But the seed itself is... it's got some pretty high numbers on protein. Depending on how it's processed, you get anywhere between 37% and 48% protein there. So it's used as a food item. It's used as feed. The fiber itself can be used to make paper, ropes, other products can be used in the textile industry. You're also seeing the oil can be used in the cosmetic industry. It's also used in the food industry to a degree. So there's a lot of uses for it. We used to grow it in the United States. When it was banned for production in the United States, it was done so because it was so similar to marijuana that the DEA, the FBI, just really did not want it out there. They didn't want to have to try and regulate it. It was Congress that in 2014 said, enough's enough. We purchased this from all over the world. If we have states that want to go ahead and do something like this, then allow them to do so. And it certainly has to be done under the auspice of the federal eye to a degree, but certainly states have to have a program in place so that they can monitor it and do research and really figure out agronomically where it fits, how it's going to work the best, and identify varieties. So in North Dakota, we're bringing in 10 different varieties. We're working with the five different producers. We're going to be looking at planting depth, timing, when you plant, how you manage, how you care for. We have to record data and information and do research on its growing stages and when it's harvested, what was the tonnage, the yield. Are we going to be, you know, trying to extract the grain out of it? Are we going to be producing oil? And is there going to be some fiber production? It would seem that the two areas that probably bring about the most interest and probably would have the best marketing ability is going to be the meal and the oil itself. But there is some need for the fiber itself. It's just those are already established markets that producers are going to have to work hard to find. But we're not there yet. We're at the beginning stages, and we'll be doing a lot of analysis and evaluation this year to figure out where that's at. I would suspect it's going to take a couple more years to do this.
Are there any projections in terms of revenue, either state revenue or, you know, if a private investor gets you know, 2-1 back on their return type of a thing? Any financial projections in the hemp world in the state of North Dakota?
Well, we're not really on the back side of this. We're on the front side. So as an agricultural commodity, it's going to be just the gross production that comes out from it. And right now that's up in the air as to what type of dollars can be earned, because first of all, it's going to come down to what's your yield going to be. And if it's fiber, what's your fiber market? Mm-hmm. If you're going to be pulling off the grain, you know, what kind of market exists there? And I've heard different numbers, so it's going to depend on, you know, what kind of market you can get established. And you're going to have to find a processor that wants to take it and either crush it and then sell the oil and sell the meal. Those are just going to be some challenges. So we're going to have to wait and see. When I talk about the fact that, you know, revenue, I don't want to say is irrelevant. Unlike the marijuana industry that is taxing marijuana itself for recreation and medical use in other states, we're not talking about taxing hemp. You grow the product to be processed, and it's going to be those value-added products that then go into the food chain or go into the industrial chain and get used, and that's where the tax and more revenue is going to be generated. But I can't put any numbers on that right now.
Look at us having this big adult conversation, huh? Jeez. Jay, I did want to ask you about hemp processing plants. My understanding is there really is not any hemp processing plants in the United States left, that it's all done overseas. And so first question is, has it been discussed ever to have a hemp processing plant in North Dakota, or do you know anything about that? And then if you might transition into the pulse crops, which is Minot has set aside some land for quite possibly the largest pulse processing plant in the United States or even the world, I've even heard.
Yeah. Well, so to address the processing plant for hemp, we do not have any processing facilities in North Dakota. And anything that's going on in the United States right now, because there is quite a bit of hemp being discussed and potentially being grown in several states in the United States, this is going to be small. It's going to be smaller enterprises that are probably going to be taking the product and going through the process of incorporating it into food items, into feed items, selling the pure oil product to the cosmetic industry, or using it in lotions and things like that that they may develop on their own. I think it's going to be small in scale. We don't have any processing planned here, although I have met with a group and suggested to them that maybe they need to be looking at the processing side versus the production side. Let farmers handle the production side, provide them a market, and they'll grow it.
To listen to the full-length interview with North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner and Industrial Commission member Doug Goring, or to listen to other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit cafecapitalism.com. That's cafecapitalism.com. My name is Jason Spiesen. This is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty, in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
United Frac, a reputation for the best quality new and used frac tanks. United Frac prides themselves in selling only the highest quality oil field equipment. United Frac has the largest frac tank inventory in North America. This includes new and pre-owned tanks. Contact a salesman today. Discover why United Frac sells more tanks in a week than competitors do in a year. Call toll-free 866-513-0565 or go to unitedfrac.com. That's United Frac.
My name is Eric Hatch. I am the owner and a realtor with Hatch Realty.
I'm Andrew Tazer, a Fargo South student. So I heard that you have an interesting business model even now. Apparently you don't hire actual real estate agents.
Never.
So could you tell me a little more about that?
So my team, I have a team of 23 people that I get to work with, and it's different than the standard real estate model. Most realtors are independent agents, and so they're a one-stop shop. They work with buyers, sellers, they do marketing, they are the secretary and custodian and cafeteria worker, and they're everything within that one job. I want to have a business where we just do the things that we're great at and that we're designed to do. You, my friend, you're designed to ask questions and to interview and to be on the radio, right? It wouldn't make sense to put you at a desk and ask you to take minutes, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not what you're designed to do. And we want to do that with our team as well. So when I'm hiring people, I don't want to find people who are already in the business. And there's some really great people already in the business, but it's really difficult to rebuild something. And somebody, if they're a realtor, they're built, if they're an independent agent, they're built to do 40 different jobs. It's what they've signed up for. But when I want them to work with me, I want them to do one or two jobs exquisitely well.
I'm Andrew Tazer, a Fargo South student.
My name's Eric Hatch. I am the owner and a realtor with Hatch Realty.
Hey folks, I'm multimedia journalist Jason Spies and the host of Building the Bakken Radio and Coffee and Capitalism. Traveling across the Rocky Mountain region and the upper Midwest has introduced me to many new people, landed me in exciting places, and created lifelong connections. And there's one place I want to tell you about today, and that's the Lodge at Deadwood. It is without a doubt my favorite place to stay in the Black Hills. In fact, not only is it my favorite, it's pretty much everybody else's. They're a three-time recipient of the best hotel, best casino, and best overall restaurant in the Black Hills. So if you're planning a conference, maybe a weekend getaway, a wedding, whatever it might be, I truly invite you to check out the Lodge at Deadwood and find out why they're consistently voted the best hotel, the best casino, and the best restaurant. Now listen, if I didn't believe that the Lodge at Deadwood was the best place to stay in the Black Hills, I wouldn't be doing this testimonial across our media network, which spans 5 states and 30 plus radio stations. And I feel very confident when I say the Lodge at Deadwood will exceed all your expectations. Check them out online today at deadwoodlodge.com. That's deadwoodlodge.com.